This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Breaking news, LeBron is a Laker.
This Clippers team will win a championship this year.
Paul George, corner three.
Yes, sir!
Bryant has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! He banks in the three! And the Lakers win the game!
What's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Battle for LA podcast, part of the Clutch Points and Blue Wire Networks. As usual, Tomer Zarli, your Clippers beat writer for Clutch Points here. Also doing some Lakers stuff on the side, which will be coming up in the next round should the Clippers make it. Actually, if the Clippers don't make it, I'll be doing some Lakers stuff either way. So, I'm joined today by my good friend, Justin Russo. Thank you for joining me once again, buddy. Appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Did you forget my name?
No, I'm just in a thoughtful mood while I'm watching this Titans Broncos tire fire. So, kind of just all over the place.
It does not look enjoyable.
No, not at all with all these kicks, missed kicks. But thanks again for joining me, Justin. Appreciate it. Gonna talk some Clippers with Game 7 Tuesday night. But we'll start off with the Los Angeles Lakers, who earlier Saturday, I believe, advanced to the Western Conference Finals. Yeah, so it seems like so
I had to
long
think.
Ago. Yeah, Saturday night they advanced to the Western Conference Finals after beating the Houston Rockets, after demolishing, embarrassing the Houston Rockets in Game 5. That was a quick series. I anticipated it being a quick series. I think one of the major reasons it was a quick series is because, A, LeBron was LeBron, which I think some people were concerned about. He was, 35 years old? You're 17. I think we've mentioned it a lot, but to see him dominate the way he has been nothing short of spectacular, I will say, because I feel like some people needed a reminder that LeBron can still do what he's doing.
He's pretty good at basketball.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing going around here.
He's just so good. Like, he's... just like he's had some weird turnovers where it didn't look like great decisions, but it doesn't matter because his fingerprint his fingers on the pulse so much offensively that you'll take some of those turnovers for the upside of every other possession that isn't a turnover.
Uh-huh.
He's just so good. He's just always in control. He knows exactly what tempo the game needs to be played at.
Yeah, I think he's mastered that, the art of controlling the game's speed and playing at his own speed, which I think is important. I mean, in the first round against the Portland Trail Blazers, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, averaged a triple-double in that series. Didn't average a triple-double against the Rockets, but look, 26 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists on 51% shooting is pretty masterful, considering, you know, the slew of forwards the Rockets had to throw at him, you know, from Covington to PJ Tucker at times to Daniel House for the first two or three games or whatever it was before he was kicked out. LeBron was just fantastic, and I thought that was I think a big part, which we're going to touch on later, but maybe just touch on it now. Frank Vogel making the tough decision after game two to take JaVale McGee out of the starting lineup and place Markieff Morris, who had a big game two or game three, I forgot which one it was, and then Vogel decided to start him, which, you know, matching the Rockets small ball, the pace and space game was Houston had a tough time after that. I mean, it was pretty much done. Markieff Morris, it was game two where he came off the bench and had 16 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 4 or 5 from beyond the arc. In just 22 minutes.
He and Rondo won that game.
Yeah, they really did. I think Houston made a comeback in that game. Rondo had, I think, 20 points in that game, something like that. Marquise Morris, 16 points. It was just a huge game in terms of the Lakers couldn't afford to go down 0-2, I don't think. I don't think I would have been worried, but I think there were some concerns heading into that game. And seeing not only LeBron and AD take control, but get contributions from Rondo and from Morris were huge.
It's interesting, too, because like the first three games of that series, the Lakers did not have a lead going to the fourth. Like, it's weird to think about, but they just didn't. And they would outplay Houston down the stretch of game two and game three. And in the second half of game three, they make the adjustment of, all right, look, we're just going to start Markieff Morris, and that's it. And sure enough, you look at it like this is a coach who knew the series was not a coin flip, but things weren't going as easy as they wanted. And he made the adjustment, a tough one. You're telling your starting center, and no matter what people think of JaVale McGee, no matter the fact that JaVale McGee only averaged 16 and a half minutes per game in the regular season, he still started 68 games. That was your starting center.
And was impactful in those 68 games. He was great for them.
Absolutely. He was good. You're telling your starting center, I'm sorry, not only are you not going to start, we're just not playing you. And he accepted it. The team moved on and they played great. Markieff Morris was fantastic. Rajon Rondo was great. Alex Caruso was good. Danny Green was good. KCP was good. Like all their role players, Talen Horton Tucker had surprising minutes as a rookie and showed some good things in the series. Kyle Kuzma, maybe he didn't score as much as he would have liked to, but he stayed engaged defensively. He was in the action cutting, you know, passing, all these things, crashing the glass. Like, this is a team that bought in that no matter what role each guy had, all that mattered at the end of the day was that they got the win. And that's exactly what happened. And I had a tweet after game one of this series, which Houston did win by 15 points. I said, everyone's going to say they also lost game one to Portland. It was no big deal, but that's different. And people did pull that tweet up and say, well, no, nothing changed. You know, nothing was different. They won the next four. Except it did change. Like, they literally had to change a key component of their lineup. And they changed their structure to end up getting more threes than they would have gotten regardless. And the big thing, and Mike D'Antoni said it after game five, was, you know, they just out-smallballed us. And my retort to that would be, no, they didn't out-smallball you. They just had a 6'9 small forward who's basically a power forward and a 7-foot center who played power forward all year. They didn't out small ball you. They just beat you with their actual players in the right positions.
I thought it was just creative on the Lakers' part, because I think we always assumed they were just going to go with a big because AD didn't like playing the five. He said he didn't want to play the five during the regular season. But playoff basketball is obviously different. And if your team needs you to play the five, you'll play the five. I think that's exactly what we saw. AD was just wreaking havoc throughout the entire series. I think it was the by game, it was basically Markieff Morris had his the third star for them was Markieff Morris in game two with 16 points. Rajon Rondo in game three with 21 points and 9 assists off the bench. Hit 3 threes in that game, 8 of 11 from the field. In game four, it was Alex Caruso, who had 16 points off the bench on 5 of 9 shooting, 2 threes. Had some defensive plays as well. So, I know, you know, Kyle Kuzma had 17 points in game five. So, they literally got different efforts from a third star in every single game, which I thought was impressive. You know, Rondo shooting 44% from three in the playoffs. I don't know if that's sustainable, but that's a hell of a boost for them right now.
Markieff Morris was 9 of 18 from 3. Danny Green was 11 of 26. Rajon Rondo, 8 of 18. They're hitting their threes. LeBron was only 10 of 34 from 3, which is 29%. But it doesn't matter when KCP is shooting 40% and Markieff Morris is shooting 50% and Green and Rondo are at least 42% or better. And it doesn't matter if, you know, Alex Caruso is still shooting 35% on threes, which is good for him. Like, their role players stepped up. And more times than not in a series, the team whose role players step up determines who moves on. Because James Harden was good in the series. By any metric you look at, James Harden was good. 29 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, shot 50% from the field, 38% from three. You know, he was good, if not great. No one else was.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook no wasn't. One else was.
Russell Westbrook. Eric Gordon outside of what, game one? Really wasn't.
I think Eric Gordon had a decent game two, if I'm not mistaken. Game three, if I'm not mistaken. But where they made that comeback to get the game. I think they retook the lead in that game. And then the Lakers just came stormed back and destroyed them in the fourth quarter.
The role guys for Houston couldn't do enough to keep them alive, and that happens. But this is also what can happen when you don't play with a true center and you're playing against a 7-foot guy and another 6'9", 6'10 guy, and, you know, Kuzma's 6'8", you know. Like, these guys can get to the rim. And if you're not stopping them before they – like, the other thing in this series that I think kind of went overlooked by a lot of people is, like, no one stopped LeBron driving to the rim. Like, all these mix-and-match defenders could not stop him driving to the rim. And I understand it's, like, damn near impossible to stop LeBron James when he gets a head start. But they weren't doing themselves any favors with how they were trying to defend him. So Houston got what was coming to them, 100%. They played the style they wanted to play. They played James Harden next to a guy who couldn't space the floor against a team that was going to punish them inside relentlessly. They got exactly what was coming to them.
Yeah, I don't think it was a surprise. I think I will say that I thought Westbrook and Harden – I mean, Harden did his job. But I thought Westbrook would do a lot more attacking and more of his damage inside. And they disrespectfully but rightfully left him open on the perimeter. And he just – you know, kept jacking away shots and kept breaking shots.
27 threes he took. 27.
That's absurd. That's absurd. Westbrook should not be taking. There's a reason they're leaving you open. I get that you're confident, but you can't be doing that. You're hurting your own team at that point. I mean, I think you can say that on multiple games. I think it was games 2, 3, and 4. The Rockets were in it heading into the fourth quarter, and they subbed in Westbrook for the final 2.5 minutes or whatever it is, and it was just turnover. After bad decisions,
the non-Harden
after
minutes.
Turnover, and it was just dreadful to watch because you knew, and you could see the Lakers were going to take complete advantage of this.
You know what the irony was for them too with doing that? They did the same thing at the end of the third quarter of game one, and it's what stretched out their lead too, is like the Westbrook minutes without Harden. And I then
he hit a couple shots though.
He hit a three.
Yeah, he hit a three that got his confidence going.
And that's the problem. When Russell Westbrook hits an early three, he thinks he can make them, and he can't. He's one of the worst 3-point shooters in the history of basketball. That's not even like hyperbole. Like, it's a fact. And this guy was just going out there and chucking up jumpers, which I get. Like, he's a decent-ish, I guess, mid-range jump shooter. Like, I get it. That's exactly what the Lakers want. That's 100% what the Lakers want. Every Russell Westbrook jumper is music to the Lakers' ears defensively.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop doing it. And even if you wanted to sit here and look at it like, well, what could Westbrook have done differently? So many times he would drive in and not know what he's doing, or he would be way too fast and out of control and turn it over. He was a 41% jump shooter in the mid-range this season. 41%. That's not good. It's not a guy that I want just taking him every chance he has coming down the floor, especially not isolated against Anthony Davis. So I don't know. Like, it's so weird because you could look at the numbers of this series in twofold. If you really wanted to, and you didn't watch the games, you could look at games 3 and 4, where Westbrook ended up averaging 27.5 points on 52% shooting from the field, 41.7% from three. And you could sit there and try to say he was good in those games. And if you watch the games, you would absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt Russell Westbrook was not good in those games. Uh-huh. And that's what really it comes down to, is they do not have a second quote-unquote star player to rely on, because it ain't Russell Westbrook. You can rely on James Harden for large stretches, but not Westbrook.
It was Chris Paul.
Yeah, that's – that is looking like – I guess franchise altering in the negative sense.
Which in terms of trades? Let me ask you this: which trade is worse, the Celtics Nets trade from back in like 2008 or whatever it was, or 11, or this trade?
I still would probably say Celtics Nets only because of the pick swaps and the actual first that turned out to be like high first rounders. I don't know if OKC is going to get high first out of Houston. Now they very well might.
I mean, if you decide to blow it up, you might end up with a high pick.
I mean, you're not wrong. They very well could.
I don't know if they will, but yeah.
That's a topic for another day.
Net rating for five-man lineup. LeBron, Danny Green, Markieff Morris, Anthony Davis, and Caldwell Pope. Their starting lineup. Plus a net rating of 54.9.
How many minutes? Like 60?
30 minutes.
Oh, 30?
30 minutes, that's, four games.
That's so crazy.
128 offensive rating, 73.7 defensive rating.
That's the other thing in the series, too, is by putting Westbrook next to Harden and Westbrook reverting back to him being a jump shooter, not only was there no spacing, but they let themselves get Harden doubled over and over and over mm-hmm. again, because they knew, the Lakers knew he was going to have to pass to Westbrook, and Westbrook would take a worse shot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, even the lineup with JaVale McGee, though, the starting lineup with LeBron, JaVale, Danny Green, AD, and Caldwell Pope, net rating of 21.5. So they were still getting it done. 127 offensive rating, 105.5 defensive rating. The defense wasn't really there, but the offense was just through the roof. So
yeah, I actually
89. That was in 89 minutes in the series.
It's interesting because Vogel made a change I didn't think they needed to make, which I didn't think they needed to take McGee out of the starting lineup. The one change that he made that I was 100% in favor of, even from game one, they could not play Dwight Howard in the series. In game one, it was very evident they could not play him. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they could play Markieff Morris either. However, at the end of the day, they did, and he was beautiful for them. So that one worked out. But they realized they can't play Dwight in that series because Dwight would get too spread out without providing any of like he's not the vertical threat that he was in his past years, and definitely not the vertical threat that JaVale McGee is now. So it takes that away.
Yeah.
And Dwight fouls way too much. So you can't have him be your rim protector if he's going to be fouling James Harden every time he comes to the paint. Now, caveat aside, James Harden gets fouled regardless of who's ever at the rim because James Harden. But still, that was a great change by Vogel. And it shows what can happen when a coach even sees things ahead of time, even in game one and even into game two, where he's like, you know what? That needs to be tinkered with. And he did it.
Mm-hmm. I do need to issue a correction, though. I did make a mistake. The starting lineup for the Lakers was LeBron, McGee, Green, AD, and Caldwell Pope at a minus 3.8 net rating. I read the wrong lineup.
Either way, that's still playable.
Yeah, yeah. 109 offensive rating, 113 defensive rating is the Rockets. But again, that LeBron, Green, Morris, Davis, and Caldwell Pope lineup, plus 54.9. I mean,
one rating. Guy.
Yeah. So
you're just putting one different guy in there.
Yeah, so yeah, not great if you're the Rockets, but look, the Lakers look ready for whoever comes out of this the Clippers Nuggets series.
The Lakers, when you factor in rest and how they've looked through two rounds and who they have to be the favorites for the title.
I think I agree with that, if only because they've looked so good. I know there were a lot of doubts of them in the bubble. They weren't playing well in the seeding games. I think a case can be made that they haven't played a team as difficult to guard as maybe like the Clippers have had to play with a Luka. But then again, James Harden is a fantastic player.
Damian Lillard is a fantastic player. I would have pushed back with that. Like, you're having to play against a system where everyone's stretched beyond the three-point line and is driving kick, right. And that's a pain right. in the ass to play against. But also, by the way, you know what else I noticed that the Lakers adjusted to in that series as it went on?
What was that?
They knew Houston wasn't going to take a mid-range shot. So anytime they would close out on them, whenever Houston would try to like attack the closeout off of a dribble drive, the Lakers defenders weren't jumping in the air. So like they knew they could give them space and retreat to the rim without them actually taking a pull-up mid-range
mm-hmm.
jumper.
Mm-hmm.
They just knew.
And on a number of occasions, I remember Austin doing this once too, where he shot fake, dribbled in, and had a wide open 15-footer by the baseline. Mm-hmm. And just hesitated, dribbled back out to the top of the key, and then reset the offense. And I'm like, dude, that's a shot that in any other offense you're taking. You got to take and make that shot. Not even make, just take that shot, keep the defense honest. But their the lack of is, mid-range shooting is just attempts is startling.
The funny part is with Austin and specifically, he didn't even take those with the Clippers. Like, that's literally not his – he does not take mid-range jumpers, like, even before he got to the Rockets. It's just weird, like
– Well, he would take those 10 to 12 – maybe, like, 8 to 10-foot floaters. He would sort of put those push shots in there. He would throw those up.
He'd throw those, but he wouldn't take mid-range jumpers.
But even that, I haven't seen him take with the Rockets at all. I mean, that's just gone. It's either layup or threes.
And that's just how their system is, which, I mean, if you really look at it from a mathematical perspective – it's the perfect system for math in terms of, like, we're only taking the most efficient shots. But when you get into the postseason and it gets bogged down, you need some guys who can hit some tough mid-range jumpers over people. You know, Anthony Davis is doing it. LeBron James is doing it. Kawhi Leonard's doing it. Jimmy Butler's doing it. Jason Tatum. I can keep rattling off names. Nikola Jokic is doing it. Like, you need guys who can get you buckets at the most inopportune moments with the most inopportune spacing, and they don't have it because James Harden ain't taking mid-range jumpers anymore.
Yeah, I love that. That was one of his best areas, I thought.
Yep.
In his first couple of years with the Bulls, that jab step mid-range. Sorry, I was reading about the Bulls on Twitter. With the Rockets.
Don't try to multitask.
You heard about that guy who's trying to fight Laker fans here in LA?
Yeah.
That Bulls got next guy. That's what I was reading.
He's probably standing on Figueroa shouting to nobody.
I don't think he even came here.
He probably didn't.
I don't think he even came here.
Can we talk about that for a second? How ridiculous is that? How ridiculous is it not only to come to another city to try to fight people over basketball takes?
I don't think he did that. I really
Okay, no, I agree. I don't think he did. However, if he did, you did it during a pandemic, which makes you the idiot.
Yeah, he's tweeting like he did. I'm sorry. He posted on, you know what? He tweeted on my way to the airport. He posted a photo of himself on the flight. He posted a photo of himself at LAX. But actually at sunset, I don't know.
Are we detectives right now?
You know, my investigative side is coming out, and I think this man may have pulled up to Staples Center today. Wow. Well, in any case, still wild and kind of lame for showing up over basketball takes on Twitter, because you're, I traveled all the way to defend Harden's dignity. It's just like, it's not that serious.
It's ridiculous, man.
Yeah, it's wild, but that's Twitter for you. In any case, I don't know. I guess we'll talk again once the semifinals are decided for the West, and we know who the Lakers are facing. But I think if Denver does advance, the Lakers will not be it won't be as challenging for the Lakers, I don't think, to get to the finals. Then again, Denver's been disrespected all postseason, so maybe they'll prove me wrong. But
I would be interested in seeing Jokic Davis.
Oof, that is quite a matchup right there.
That's a great matchup.
Yeah. That the Clippers Lakers though would just be fun. I really want that. If only for the storylines and the TV and then the highlights and all that we get, and the tripping, the back and forths.
I've said this even during the hiatus, even when the seeding games first started, even when the playoffs first started, even when the Clippers were up 3-1. I'm gonna be so disappointed if we don't get Clippers Lakers this season, because. Yeah. Everything that has happened has been like the prelude to that meeting. The four regular season meetings were close as hell and tough as nails for each team. And it's like, there's so many storylines at play. And if we don't get it, it's just a massive disappointment. And we'd only have the Clippers to blame at this point.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I'm just more disappointed we won't get that matchup. I personally care who wins, but I think you got to get to that matchup first.
It's weird too because I've confused people before, like a couple weeks ago when I told people, I was like, I don't care who wins, I just want it. And they're like, but you write about the Clippers and all this stuff. It's like, yeah, I don't care though. Like, I want the matchup from a pure fan standpoint, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like a basketball fan, That's the matchup you should be wanting because of storylines and narratives and the players and LeBron versus Kawhi. And, you know, can AD and PG rise to the occasion, deliver their respective team to the finals after they've had this much malign, like, oh, they can't do it when the moment's on, like all this stuff. And if we don't get it,
it'll be so disappointing.
It's just so damn disappointing.
Yeah. I will say though, we'll just jump onto the Clippers side right now then. You know, I don't even know where to start, but I will start by telling you guys about Indeed.
I like your segue.
I forgot to let you know.
No, you're anyways, good. I like it.
But just to let you guys know about Indeed, you know, even though sports had a break, your businesses did not. And you have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Just go right now after the podcast to Indeed.com/BlueWire. So jumping ahead to the Clippers, I think we'll start with what the topic has been over the last couple of days. The main topic is it Doc Rivers' decision making, or is it Montrezl Harrell playing, or is that the same thing? I feel like we'll start with Doc Rivers' decision making, because Doc, I think, is a good coach. Doc is a player's coach. Doc is a coach who believes in his players, possibly more than any coach that we've seen in the league. You know, we've heard players call him a father figure, and there's certainly a bond there. Just a belief and a bond that is unlike any we've seen. Maybe a Greg Popovich has it internally in a way. But I just don't think we've seen this, recently or much at all. Having said that, Doc does have his faults. He is loyal, to a fault, and I think we've seen that. We saw that in the Dallas Mavericks series, giving Montrezl Harrell a pretty long leash, I would say, and placing him in some unfavorable matchups against Boban Marjanovic, and then with Luka Doncic in pick and rolls. And then, you know, in this matchup against the Denver Nuggets, that long – I mean, I don't think it's been a long leash because Tress has not played more than maybe the 14 minutes a game. But those 14 minutes have been just dreadful, to put it lightly and to put it briefly.
I think they're connected, from the standpoint that Montrezl Harrell's been bad, but I also think he's been bad because of the positions he's been put in. I'm not going to just outright say the guy's been terrible on his own volition, even though I think he hasn't been good and he's done some boneheaded things. I still think the coaching staff has failed him and the team in a major way. You talked about it in the first round. What was the one thing when it was 2-2? What was the one thing we kept talking about? Don't play him against Boban Marjanovic. And it's easy. It's so easy because Boban is a bench player just like Trez. And when you see Boban come to the table, you don't put Trez in. And you could actually just play Trez more before Boban gets in and then take him out when Boban checks in. So
we talked about this. You were on the pod and we talked about this.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You see Nikola Jokic in the game. At no point when you see Nikola Jokic in the game can the thought of, gee, I should put our 6'7 center in, ever come across your mind. Ever. Ever. Did you know in the 11 postseason game, I'm not counting game 5 blowout against Dallas. I'm not counting that. Did you know in the other 11 postseason games, Montrezl Harrell has 24 rebounds?
In 11 games.
In 11 games.
Yeah. There's just...
If your 6'7 energy center isn't scoring, and he's not scoring really, and when he does score, it's not much. Yes, he had 15 points in game 4 and 15 points in game 1. I get it. I 100% get it. He even had 10 points in game 2, 11 points in game 3. I get it. He did tally up some points.
The problem isn't offensively.
It is offensively too, though. I'm telling you, watching their offense with him on the floor and him off the floor is two different things.
Yeah, it definitely stagnates once he's in. Yes, I will say that.
They've tried, and I've talked about this on Twitter. I've talked about it with people. I've texted people in the know. I've texted people that I talk to as reporters. And the one thing that is driving me crazy, more than just the defense that happens when he's on the floor, is the offense. Because when he's on the floor, what's the two things that you've noticed in this series with him on the floor offensively? Number one, they try like hell to get him the ball.
Right.
They force feed him. I understand. I understand why you want to. Number two, and finally, they put him in the worst spots. They have him standing in the dunker spot. They don't have him moving. Having Montrezl Harrell, who I will repeat is a 6'7 center. He's not a power forward as much as people want to try to say it on positional charts. He's a center. That's his position. When he comes in the game, he is a center. If you're having your 6'7 center stand in the dunker spot offensively, where the opposing big, whether it's Nikola Jokic or Mason Plumlee, who are both big men and much bigger than him, you're completely suffocating the offensive structure that you have built, because now that big man that's defending him in the dunker spot is so much closer to the rim and doesn't have to move to cover space. So you've completely neutered your offense. And on the defensive end, he's not stopping nobody. Jokic is so big and tall, he's just going to shoot over the top of him. And even if you bring the double with Harrell guarding him, he can look right over him and make the read for the pass. So it doesn't matter. And the problem really comes down to they have not put him in the right spots. He's looked fine against Mason Plumlee. He's looked god-awful against Nikola Jokic. And if you have any common sense, through 6 games of a series, the number one rule should be do not play Montrezl Harrell with Nikola Jokic on the floor. The number two rule, get that man into some damn pick and rolls, because my God, if he's just going to stand there ain't no point of him being in the game, because he's an offensive center more than anything. And if you're not going to put the offensive center in his offensive center spots, you're screwing everything up. Don't play him then. It's that simple.
Yeah, I agree with 100% of what you
I'm
just
said. I'm sorry
for
ranting.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is – you're just speaking, I think, what some people have seen, some people haven't seen. I don't know if you haven't seen this. I don't know what you're watching. But I think Jokic said his best himself the other day. I joined the Nuggets Zoom call and cautiously raised my hand to ask him a question. Nuggets media were polite enough to call on me, and I asked
him.
I asked him. I was like, "Hey, what are some of the differences between, for you, that you see between Jokic, between Zubats and Harrell?" And Jokic pretty much explained it. You know, he said the first thing he said, I just asked for challenges. The first thing he said is there are two completely types of defenders. He pointed out defenders right away. Zubac is bigger and taller, he said. He's covering the space really good. I can't shoot over him easy. I know you and Jovan talked about that quote right there. And then he said, Harrell is a strong guy who will always get into my body. But again, you said it, at 6'7", and with Joker, who is what, 7 foot? 6'11", maybe?
I think he's like 7'1".
7'1", even that difference.
You're talking basically half a foot. Let's just call it half a foot.
Yeah, that's the difference between seeing a double team and being able to shoot over a guy, as compared to Zubac, who is a much bigger, I don't want to say as athletic defensively as Trez, but he's able to, like Jokic said, cover the space around really well, cover the paint well. So the fact that Jokic said that, you know, openly and started with talking about defense off the bat, the defensive challenges, to me sort of came as like, all right, so this guy is just like well aware that with Zubac it's going to be tough, and with Trez it's going to be a much, much easier task. And so, you know, I just to look at the numbers, I mean, against I'm sure you were going to bring this up, but against Zubac this series, in 43 minutes, Jokic is shooting 29 of 61 from the field, 47%, 47.5%. In 13 minutes against Montrezl Harrell, 12 of 17 from the field, 70.6%. I mean, he's got – it's just tough. The stats are really just showing themselves. I mean, obviously, Harrell's been limited against Jokic and limited minutes against Jokic, but there's a reason for that. It's because Jokic is absolutely tearing him and the Clippers up when Harrell's matched up with him. And so through six games, you would assume, like I asked Doc this the other day, cautiously, you know, asking him like, hey, how much is lineup data something you pay attention to? Because right now, implying that, you know, Trez is getting freaking murked whenever he's out there. And he says, we see all of it. He said, I had 1,000 coaches. I got 5 analytical guys and we see everything. And at this point, it just leads me to believe that it's a trust thing. It's a bond thing where he believes and wants to live or die by Trez, you know, by believing in Trez. And if they die believing in Trez, then so be it. But the impact of not believing in Trez, benching him, ego-wise, confidence-wise, free agency-wise. This is a guy who's a free agent this summer who was looking at a near max contract to start the season, and that's probably dropped off significantly. There's a lot at stake for Trez here, and I think Doc wants to preserve as much of that as possible. So, statistically, there is no reason Trez should be playing more than the minutes that Plumlee's on the court. Just to put it straightforward. Trez is a great guy. He's never turned down an interview for me, except for once, and he's just going through some stuff, and I understand that. He's a fantastic person. Obviously going through a lot in his life as well.
This isn't personal.
Yeah, I know. But if the goal is to win a playoff series, just like Frank Vogel did with the Lakers, egos aside, JaVale, take a seat. Dwight, take a seat. We're going to do what's best for the team. And what's best for the team in this Clippers Nuggets series is for Trez to only play the Mason Plumlee minutes, and that's it. The second you see Jokic walk up to the scorer's table, you have to send Zubac to the scorer's table. That's how I feel about it.
We need to change it. It's not a series anymore. It's a game.
It's a game.
It's a game. It's not even a series. It's a literal game. It's not, oh, if you lose game 7, game 8's around the corner. No, it's a literal game. It is a game. And that's the thing. It's just a game. It's one game is going to determine everything. And I want to say something here. I know I've kind of crapped on Doc Rivers a lot. I get it. I understand I'm not a major rah-rah Doc guy. Okay, I get it. Also, I have some sympathy for him because this is an unenviable position to be in. Your Sixth Man of the Year award winner, Whether we think he deserved it over Dennis Schroeder or even Lou Williams does not matter. He won it. It's his award. Won it like a week ago, in fact. During this series, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So you have your sixth man of the year award winner who was averaging, I don't even remember how many minutes per game he was averaging in the regular season. It's probably like 25, 27, 28, something like that, right?
In the regular season, he was about 27 minutes, yeah.
Okay. He's already taken a minutes cut. And whether or not you want to say that's because he came into the bubble late because of the passing of his grandmother, that's one thing. His minutes have been cut by basically 10 minutes a game. He went from 27.8 minutes a game to 18.1. So now he's already lost 10 minutes. Okay? Now, remind you, sixth man of the year award winner already saw his minutes get cut by 10 minutes per game. And now you have to tell him when he's on the verge of a new free agent contract that could net him, honest to God, in a five-year contract from the Clippers before the season, if you were just spitballing, he could have got $100 million. He probably could have got $20 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have to tell him, if you're Doc Rivers and doing what we say, you're going to have to tell him, I'm sorry, I know free agency is around the corner, and in fact, it could even be after next game. If we lose, but I'm sorry, you're not playing tonight. Or if you do play, you're only getting maybe 5 to 8 minutes. That's a crappy position to be in as a head coach. It's real. It's not even an ego thing. It's a sympathy thing. Like, you're telling this guy who won an award for being the best bench player in basketball, who already had his minutes cut by 10 minutes per game in the postseason, to not play when free agency is literally a game away for him. It's tough. And also, I don't know what people want in Doc. I overreact to things all the time. I'm obviously guilty of this. We all are. I don't know what people want a Doc Rivers to say to some things. Like, yeah, I'm just not going to play the guy. Like in a press conference, like what? Like that's not happening. He's not going to just kill his confidence in the media. Now, in closed doors, he might tell him, you're only getting about 10 minutes tonight. I'm sorry. But he's not going to tell the media that, because we, quotations, I guess, will run with that and really kill him. And you can't do that. It's a tough situation. I sympathize with him.
It's not an enviable situation. I do want to add, though.
There's one game. You gotta play to win. You don't play for friends. You play for wins.
Yeah, 100%. I do want to say, though, that this isn't entirely on Trez, though.
It's not.
Because, you know, I looked at this earlier, but in the last two games, let's say, I think it was the second half of the last two games, the Clippers starters have been god awful.
Yeah. It's not just on him.
I'm trying to find it real quick.
It's not just on him. Like, I know I've referenced, like, oh, the Clippers were minus 30 in the 9 minutes that Harrell's played against Jokic in the second half of game 5 and game 6. I get it, that's awful. And yeah, if he's not playing in those minutes, they likely win. But you got outscored 67-30 as a team in the second half of one game, guys.
Yeah, it is. I think it's 131-84 over the last two second halves. I believe it's 131-84, I think is what it is.
131-84?
I think is what the scoring is second half wise.
Even if you take away his minus 30, you're still getting outscored by 17 points. Now, in two games, it's only 8.5 points a game. But still, you're still getting outscored.
Yeah, here it is. 131-84 in the second half of game 5 and game 6. So
I tweeted out earlier today, I don't know if you saw this. Do you know only two lineups in this series have played at least 30 minutes, I believe it is? Not just for the Clippers, but for the Nuggets too.
Is it just the starters?
Yeah, it's the starters.
Yeah, I figured. There's been a lot of tinkering and
oh, I'm sorry, 50 minutes, excuse me. Yeah, they've only played one lineup each at 50 minutes. You ready for the fun part?
Okay.
They're both negatives.
Both starting lineups, net rating wise?
Yeah.
Sure.
Beverly, George, Leonard, Morris, Zubats is negative 0.7 in 61 minutes, so like nothing. Murray, Harris, Grant, Millsap, Jokic is minus 2.4 in 113 minutes, so nothing. It's just crazy.
Yeah, this is an even series, and more even than I think it should have been. I think
they made it harder for themselves, which is what they did against Dallas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know how much of it is maybe Doc trying to hide some cards, maybe not playing a Marcus Morris at the five or Jamichael Green at the five as much. Maybe saving that for the Lakers series. Because I think we talked about it during the Dallas series and how they didn't trap Luka until game five. Game five and then game six.
Can I talk about that for a second? I don't mean to cut you off.
Actually, I'm going to read a Bet Online ad real quick, and then you can talk about that.
Go right ahead, baby. Sorry. Give it to me.
Just going to tell you guys about Bet Online. As you know, the wait is finally over, and football is finally back. And you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and even coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Just head to BetOnline online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Go ahead, Justin.
So I lost my train of thought. Oh, my God.
Trapping. You're talking about.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you. This is why we have a duo here. You brought up how they trapped Luka Doncic. I remember through the first four games of that series, I was like pounding my fists on the table. Why are you not trapping him? Why are you not trapping him? Right. Mm-hmm. Do you know what we haven't seen much of since game three or four? I believe it might have been game three. It might have been game three. I have to go back and look. I did a video breakdown on it. I'm sorry. All these games run together. When you play the same team over and over, every game looks kind of similar to some degree.
What we haven't seen since game three?
Yeah.
Is it?
I'm sorry. Game four. Since game four, all that much.
Is it trapping Jamal out of the pick and roll?
No. We haven't really seen that.
Is it doubling Jokic?
Yes.
Yeah.
So game four, they doubled Jokic in the mid post. Not all the time, but they did about 9 or 10 times. I did a video breakdown of it, and it worked. They didn't do it a lot, but they did it every now and then. It's actually kind of what might have won them game four to some degree, just to some degree. Mm-hmm. They didn't really do it in game five. They did it here and there in game six. When I say here and there, I mean maybe twice. One of them was a turnover, I believe. I vividly remember a turnover in game six from it. They just stopped doing it, and I don't know why. I don't. Because even as good as I think the Denver role players have been, who do you want taking a shot? Nikola Jokic or Jeremy Grant?
Yeah, absolutely Jeremy Grant. I mean,
who do you want taking a shot? Torrey Craig or Jamal Murray?
Torrey Craig.
I just don't understand why you see who is on the floor and choose the literal worst decision every time.
I think this just goes back to them not wanting to show all their cards. That's the only reasonable explanation, because
you know what happens when you don't show all your cards?
You gamble and you might lose.
Yeah.
You might lose. Yeah. That's the only way I can explain it, because this team was built to be able to switch, trap, and be able to recover. And Zubats has shown the ability to be able to, show on some pick and rolls, drop if he needs to, and this team is capable of it. And so if they're not doing it, my only thought is they're trying not to do it, because nothing else makes sense to me. I will say, though, that I don't think they've attacked Nikola Jokic as much,
defensively.
I don't think he's a bad defender. But he's certainly not an above average defender, I don't think.
They haven't made him move his feet nearly enough.
Yeah, and I think you have to – challenging his verticality is just his – his lateral movement. Challenging his movement out of pick and rolls, challenging him to defend, make him come out on a Kawhi or a Paul George, or make him have to recover on a roll, on a Zubats. I just think they haven't really done anything with that. They've really let him off the hook this series.
I do want to give him credit, and even Denver, the entire Denver team, like, they're just not going away. They were down by 13 with a minute and a half to go in game five and could have gave up, and they didn't. They were down by 19 early in the third quarter of game six and could have gave up and didn't. They're not going away, and they believe that they can beat the Clippers. And this is why I said during game five, when the Clippers were up by even, I think, like 15 at one point before it got down to 13 with a minute and a half to go in the third, if you let a team hang around long enough, whether or not you think they're your equal, usually it will come back to bite you in the ass. And it came back to bite them twice. In game five, it was the Paul Millsap third quarter. In game six, it was everything else. They couldn't stop anything. They shot like crap in the third quarter. Like, if you look at it, third quarters have killed them. Like, they come out focused and then stop. Like, third quarter, Paul Millsap, game five, killed them. He had, like, 14 points in the third.
Yeah, 14 of his 17 in the third quarter.
Third quarter, game six, they shot 4 of 20 and gave up 16 free throws to Denver. This is a team with their back against the wall, and you're giving them 16 free throw attempts?
And the thing is, they increased their lead to the biggest margin at 19. They were up 68-49 at that point. When Jamal Murray went down on the PG block, PG rushed over and made a three as a trailer.
Yep.
And Denver called timeout with, I think it was 10 minutes left. And from then on, it was just the house was just burned down.
You almost cussed. And I love you for it.
At 19, I thought, all right, this is where they're going to change what happened in game five. Put their foot on the throat. Jamal Murray's not looking good out there. He's moving gingerly. You have the starters out there who knew what happened in game five, and you're going to put your foot down and end it in game six. And they did the exact opposite. And they couldn't defend. Now, I don't know how many of those fouls were actually fouls, but they defended without – they couldn't defend without fouling.
Hold on.
No, they did foul. They did foul. I will say
I'm not going to sit here, and I want this to be clear. They gave up 16 free throw attempts because they were lazy.
No, yeah, again, but 16 free throw attempts in a quarter is still pretty wild. And I think
it's wild,
and
but you
I
know
think
what?
That Doc did deliver a message today in his media availability when he said, hey, they shot 16 free throws in a quarter. That really let them back in the game. I felt like that was a bit of a message. I will just say that. I don't want to get Doc.
It can be a message all he wants. I'm going to say it again. The refs are not why they blew that lead.
No. They're not why they blew that lead. No, of course not.
And I'm not going to look at the refs and be like, man, sure wish you would have called fewer fouls when we couldn't make a shot and couldn't defend them without fouling.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm sorry. You fouled them. You fouled them time and again. Paul Millsap drew a foul on Jamichael Green because Jamichael Green wasn't in legal guarding position. It was 100% a foul. They just fouled. They got lazy. They thought it was over again. And I'm sorry. In this version of the National Basketball Association, I don't care if you got a 25-point lead in the second half. The game ain't over. Not with threes and not with the ability to get to the free throw line that a lot of these players have. It ain't over.
And they
stopped playing.
Yeah, I think
and Doc's right. I want to say that. Doc is right. As bad as the defense has been in the second half, most especially third and fourth quarters the last two games, their offense has let them down. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard have not shot well in the second half of these last two games. Their entire offense as a team has not moved the ball. People are not cutting. There's no screens. It's so much one-on-one stuff. It's so much easier to guard a team when they're only giving you one action.
Yeah.
And they're helping Denver more than they realize. And Denver's doing an amazing job. I'm trying not to take away from what Denver has done.
I think you can say that while Denver has done a good job, and we've said this all year, the only team that can beat the Clippers is the Clippers themselves. If they don't do what they're supposed to do, they don't communicate, bring the energy defensively, if they don't move the ball offensively, they're going to lose games because they already have sort of a liability when they bring Lou and Trez off the bench defensively. So that's something they already have to account for off the bat. And you just can't afford to take plays off. I don't care how
not in the postseason.
Much of a lead. Yeah, I don't care how much of a lead you have. And they've done that twice, three times. I think they did that in game four too, but they were able to recover.
Okay, so three things. Number one, you know why this is even more infuriating for this version of the team?
Because
they came back from 31 in the third quarter against Golden State last season in the playoffs. Among any team, that team, the team with Patrick Beverley and Landry Shamet and Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams and Ivica Zubac, who were on the team last year, Jamichael Green, who were playing minutes, those guys, more than anybody, understand the problems of taking the foot off the gas in a postseason game in the second half with a monster lead. And they still did it, not only twice in a row, and this is the second point, this isn't a two games in a row thing. In game four, they blew a 21-point lead and had to save their own ass at the end of the game. Furthermore, point three, this is not even a one-series trend. This is an actual team trend because they did the same thing in the first round against Dallas where they blew a major lead in a game, and they've done it all year. They did it against Atlanta in the comeback where Atlanta shouldn't have won that game. This is a team who in the second half of games, when they get a big lead, for some reason, I don't know why, they just assume the other team is going to stop playing. And I'm sorry, this is the NBA. No team's just going to quit, except for maybe the Houston Rockets. So, and maybe I just jinx the Clippers for game seven and they just roll out of bed and roll an egg out on the floor and just keel over. I don't know.
You asked me, let's bring up what you asked me earlier. Level of confidence, 1 through 10, 10 being the most confident, that the Clippers win tomorrow. Or well, today,
five.
By the time this podcast.
I was a 5 before I started talking about this.
Wait, what are you now?
Like a 3. No, I'm going to be – I'm 50-50. I've – after – so I'm going to be honest with you. After game 5, I knew they were losing game 6. It didn't even matter the lead that they got. I just knew. Like, once you do that, I just think it's ingrained. Like it's gonna, like, you know what I mean? So I figured there was gonna be a game 7. I've kind of waffled between Denver's just gonna obliterate them and, you know, the Clippers are gonna answer the bell and they're gonna win. I don't know how much they're gonna win by, but they're gonna win.
So I told,
I'm 50-50.
So you're out of 5 pretty much.
Yeah.
I told one of my buddies this. I said, well, I actually tweeted this too, which I think some Clipper fans called me after being negative. I said, as soon as Nikola Jokic hit that off balance, wrong footed fadeaway, like goofy looking shot over Paul George in the first half, I was like, that is a bad omen for the rest of this game. That is a bad sign. And I don't know if the Clippers will win this game after that.
There's been a couple of them because Jamal Murray hit that banked in 3 over Harrell in game 5 in the comeback.
That one, again, they were in the middle of a comeback. But this game, this was still early when the Clippers had, I think, like a 12-point lead when Jokic hit that shot. And I'm like, that, when he makes that, he's feeling he's so comfortable. Good. He's feeling like himself. He's not – I thought that was a bad omen, and they ended up losing that game. I'll be honest. My confidence right now is probably at a 3. And I don't know if it's not. I don't think it's pessimism. I just think that when you allow a team – so much confidence. They are just brimming with confidence and swagger right now. Like, they did this last series. They did this last postseason. And they almost beat the Blazers, in game 7 last year to go to the conference finals to play the Warriors. They lost by, I think, 4. It was like a 2-possession game, I think it was. So they have been through this. And like Jokic said it yesterday after the game. He said, I'm feeling no pressure right now. The pressure is all on them. And he's 100% right. They are playing so free and so smooth that even if the Clippers go up by 20 tomorrow, I don't even think anyone will relax. Or on the Nuggets, I'd even be worried because the Nuggets know that they've given up big leads in the past and they probably will do it again. and the Clippers, maybe they'll say, hey, we know what we're capable of. Let's try and end this right now. I don't see that happening. I really don't know. But my confidence level right now is at a 3 because I believe they've just given Denver way too much confidence. I mean, Jamal Murray shot 9 of 25 in game 5 and they lost that game. And the Nuggets won that game.
Yeah. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were great.
Yeah, Jamal Murray shot, I think it was 9 of 13 in game 6. I think it was pretty good.
No, 9
of 13, what was he?
In game 6?
Am I off about that? What was it?
Yeah, in game 5, Jamal Murray was
9 of 25 in that game.
9 of 25.
Yeah, no, in game 6, he was 9 of 13 from the field.
Oh, wow, he was, yeah.
Yeah, so he shot and played well that game. 21 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. And again, you let him hang around, he's not going to shoot 30% for a series. He's going to get loose eventually.
And they might have the ultimate high variance player off the bench in the series and Michael Porter Jr.
Absolutely.
I think he takes the most god-awful shot decisions I've ever seen. But does it matter if you're making them at that point in a postseason series? No. In a one-game playoff at this point?
He made his comments about not moving the ball as much. He got the ball with a two-point game with about a minute left and pulled up for a contested three and made that thing.
That was
and
the only shot he hit.
And essentially ended the game there because it was a five-point game. Clippers didn't score on that, and they were too flustered. It was over.
Only shot he hit all game, too.
Yeah. I think it was 1 of 3 or something like that. But, yeah. And then, you know, in game 6, he goes for 13.7 rebounds. He hits 3 threes in 27 minutes. He's a plus 12 off the bench. Ended up with the second highest plus minus on the team.
There's a shot he hits in the second quarter to cut it to 10. Left wing 3, Marcus Morris Sr.'s closing out. It's a great contest, and he just hits it. It doesn't matter.
So he's capable of going off, and you've used up the games where I personally feel like you've used up the games where Jamal Murray has gone quiet. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're due for a big Jamal Murray game. And I hope that the Clippers can survive it, if only so we get Clippers-Lakers. Because, like I said, Denver, everyone on that team just has so much confidence. Coming back from down through, just to tie the series, not even to win it yet, but to tie the series, they know that they can win multiple games against this team. They know that they can overcome any deficit. And they just know that they're never out of it. And I think that's that you gave them life not once, but you gave them life twice. Will you make that mistake a third time? I don't know, but it might be too late.
The one guy they need to put on Jamal Murray is Paul George. That's the guy. I don't think Kawhi can guard him, as messed up as that sounds. I think Kawhi struggles with how the low center of gravity and the shiftiness.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. Paul George has done a fantastic job on him all series. He's been terrific on him.
If you just look at the matchup data, courtesy of the NBA, Jamal Murray is 7 of 22 with Paul George defending him. And here's the crazy part. He's 2 of 10 in the on twos. He's 5 of 12 on threes, 2 of 10 on twos.
Wow.
He has 23 points on 22 shots. That's the guy who has to guard him from the jump. And I understand they're going to want to try to pay Patrick Beverley on him. I get it. Nope. I'm going to tell you exactly why. Patrick Beverley, while he is on a minutes limit, is probably going to play close to 30 minutes in game 7. You cannot have Patrick Beverley foul out. That's also what kind of screwed them over in game 6.
I agree.
He fouled out early in the fourth quarter. I think what they should do, Paul George on Jamal Murray, Patrick Beverley on Gary Harris, Kawhi Leonard on Jeremy Grant. Actually, no. Paul George on Jamal Murray, Kawhi Leonard on Gary Harris, Patrick Beverley on Jeremy Grant, Marcus Morris on Paul Millsap, and then Zubats on Jokic. Because honestly, the reason I would actually want Beverley on Grant is I think Beverley as the low man in pick and roll defense, even though as good as Kawhi is at it, I think he can wreak more havoc trying to rip the ball away from like Jokic. Because in game 4, and even in game 5, you had one of these. When Jokic gets the ball near the nail on a roll and spins into Zubat's body, Beverly comes from the weak side, digs down, and rips him out. He's done it a couple times. That's the guy I want as the low man. And I don't think it does anything for your defense to have Beverly be handsy with Jamal Murray and get into foul trouble and get them easy points.
I don't think so either. I think best option is throwing Paul George at him.
Which is funny because Paul George has been in foul trouble a couple times in the series from similar things. But you need Paul George.
Those have been some offensive fouls that he's extended the arm driving in or gotten charges. So he's had some weird ones.
I got to be honest. He's had some absolutely abysmal fouls. I don't I don't mean like called. I mean like where he's done it to himself. I believe it's – what is it? He's committed 9 offensive fouls in the postseason.
Yeah. A lot of them are self-inflicted. He's just extending the arm or getting a charge taken. So, it's just self-inflicted. But again, this goes back to this. The Clippers are killing themselves. They're their own worst enemies.
Well, at the end of the day, they better be careful because their own worst enemy might actually end up being Denver if they're not careful.
I mean, at this point, at this point with the bubble format, I feel like logic sort of is thrown out the window and it's just a game of who gets luckier and who wants it more. 50-50 balls are going to be huge in this game. I don't think if either team goes up by 10 or 12, there's going to be a sense of calmness. Maybe even 15 or 16. I don't think there's a sense of calmness.
I'll be honest with you. I think if Denver goes up by 15, I think they're more confident and comfortable than the Clippers will be up by 15.
After the last couple of games, I think I agree with you. But I think Denver has a tendency to let teams back into games when they get up big. Just like game 7 against Utah, where they were up by, I want to say, 15 or 16 points in that first half and then let Utah come back and make it a game. So, but again, this is the NBA and teams make runs. So,
look, Denver might win. Denver could win. And I would actually favor them for this game 7 because I'm not a big momentum believer in sports. I just think every game is different. Every possession's different. But I believe in their belief that they can do it.
I would agree with that momentum isn't a big thing, especially in the bubble, except when it's a 3-1 deficit against a team that has looked this flustered in second halves. We talked about it before. You looked at the faces of during that time, that Clippers timeout, the face of Marcus Morris, Paul George, Kawhi. They looked like they were looking into a 1,000-yard stare. They had a 1,000-yard stare on their face. They just could not believe what was going on. And so, I mean, that's 2 straight games now. I don't know. Do you start to question whether you guys can do it? I mean, after game 5, Marcus said they knew what they had to do. Paul George said it's up to them in game 6. Game 6 came and they didn't take advantage. And Paul still thinks you're in the driver's seat for this game 7. I don't know how he thinks that.
Can I be honest with you? People trying to rip him for thinking that is weird. Like, if you don't think that you are the better team, you're just not going to win.
No, I will say, in the sense that you've just blown 2 huge games and 2 leads, I don't think there is a driver's seat here. I think there's 2 people in a car wrestling to get to the driver's seat.
I would agree with that.
I don't think there's anyone sitting in the driver's seat right now. I think there's 2 people in the back seat trying to get to the driver's seat, if we want to put it, you know, based on this analogy. Because I just don't think either team has control here. We could see anything happen on Tuesday night. So, that's how I feel.
It's going to be crazy.
Before we let you go, anything else you wanted to add? Maybe a prediction for the game, score-wise?
I don't have a prediction. pain.
Pain.
I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to be completely honest. The person inside me who has watched the Clippers, rooted for the Clippers, been to Clipper games, covered the Clippers, thinks there's no way they win on Tuesday. I will say that because I think people need to understand this isn't a 1-year thing. This ain't a 2-year. We're talking decades of what is the worst thing that can happen, and then it happens. Until they do it, until they win and get to the conference finals for the first time in their franchise history. This is the 50th year in franchise history. This was supposed to be the year. 50 years, make a conference finals. They were up 3-1, 13 points late in the third quarter of game 5. and they couldn't do it yet. If they don't do it on Tuesday night in Game 7 against the Denver Nuggets, in a series they were massively favored and up 3-1 with and up by 13 late in game in the third quarter of Game 5, I don't know when they'll ever do it. And I know that sounds completely pessimistic and defeatist, but as a person who has been around this team for decades, literally nothing that happened in the last two games gives me any reason to believe they can do it until they do it. And right. That's how I feel.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you were, I may have thought, but I was a game six of the Rockets, Clippers Rockets series, and watched that just meltdown. And the walk out of Staples Center was just, I don't even know how to explain. I don't remember. I remember that walk very vividly because a friend who I was trying to get into basketball and became a Clipper fan out of it was just like, kept asking me, dude, what the hell just happened? Oh, what the hell just happened?
The Clippers happened.
And so, you know, when the Clippers lost game five, I messaged my group chat, which has a couple of Laker friends. And they were just like, dude, why is everyone going nuts? Why? Like, you guys still have game six and even a game seven if you need it. I'm like, dude, it's because it's the Clippers. I'm like, if you don't root for this team, you don't know. You just haven't been through it. And then they lose game six. And I'm like, dude, you see, I told you, it's just a weird. I don't even think it's a pessimist. I think until you see it happen, it's just impossible to believe it, to imagine it. And so even when they won game four, I was like, okay.
I had a tweet that I kind of regret. Like, I might have put bad juju out there after game four.
I don't believe in jinxes myself.
Personally. I don't really either, but I had I should try to find it. It was like, it's a good thing that September 9th, here we go. At 9:04 p.m., the Los Angeles Clippers have taken a 3-1 series lead. It's a good thing they've never blown a lead like that in the second round of a postseason series.
Your sarcasm came back for you.
Yep.
I don't know what happens tomorrow. I'm cautiously pessimistic. I will say that because
are you at the stage of like hoping for the best, preparing for the worst?
Oh, I've spent the last 24 hours preparing for the worst. I really have. It's just been like a you know what? There's nothing worse than this is before I was covering the team. I was just a fan back then. There's nothing worse than that. And so when they lost game six, I think when I talked to you, when they lost game five, I was like, what the hell do you even ask? Because, okay, they still have two more chances, but eh. And then when they lost game six, I'm like, okay, this is 2015 all over again. I tweeted that. I was like, we're literally watching 2015 all over again, where you had a big double-digit lead. They had the same exact lead amount. It was 19 points that they blew in 2015 game six, yep. And it was 19 in game six of 2020 that they blew.
Yep.
In the third quarter.
Yep.
And it's almost laughable because it's unbelievable. You don't even know what to expect at this point. So
the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. Really?
Death, taxes, so. Clippers taking years off my life?
Years? I mean, I might be dead in a couple of weeks.
I think people need to understand something, and I understand there are Laker fans that listen to this, and they probably tuned out by now because the Laker talk is over. I just want people to understand something. Until you've lived it, until you've lived being a Clipper fan, you don't know what it's like. Like, I'm being honest. Like,
no, I know.
People kept talking about, like, how, oh, it's got to be crappy to be a Cubs fan. They get so close and never, like, this is worse. Because I think personally it's worse just because this was the year and everything broke how it should have been. And it might not matter because you're the Clippers. And I don't know what they do if they lose games. Do they change the name? They might just have to change the name.
I mean, you go back to 06 with Rajah Bell's three over Daniel Ewing.
Oh, my God.
That substitution, you go back to the eight-second violation.
They're 0-7. They're 0-7 all-time in franchise history in games that could get them to the conference finals. They're 0-6 since moving to Los Angeles because one of those times was in Buffalo.
Buffalo.
So they're 0-6. One of them was that game 7 at Phoenix where they got hammered. Everything else is the Houston series and this series.
It's just, that Houston series, though, I mean, once they lost game 6, you knew they were done. I think there's still hope that they can win this series here because, one, they don't have to go to Denver or anything like that. I still think they have the best player in the series, although Nikola Jokic just played like the best player in the series.
So two things. Number one, you're absolutely right. When game 7 came around for that 2015 series, I knew they were done.
It was over. There was absolutely no hope. And everyone walked out of Staples Center that way.
I don't know I haven't reached the no hope stage of this one. Maybe that'll change after the first quarter on Tuesday. I don't know. However, what is a little bit weird, I guess, and it's something that I was thinking about today, oddly enough, as I was doing stuff around the house. It's probably good for this team that there is no home court because this game 7 at Staples Center, if this had happened like this, buddy, that stadium will be silent waiting for something to go wrong. The tension. You've been there when it's been tense. You would just have fans that would just sit there just waiting for something to go wrong. Maybe it's good it's in a bubble setting where there ain't no fans.
So in that Rocket series, I went to game 3 and I went to game 4. And I think it was game 4 was the one where DeAndre Jordan shot like 20 free throws in the first half and the Clippers still blew him out. And then I was like, you know what? We're probably good here. I'm like, even if they lose game 5, you probably come home and you just demolish them. Clippers fans are excited. The Staples was rocking during that series. And so I was like, all right, you know, they probably come home and take care of it if they lose game five. And once they lost game 6, in the manner in which they lost game 6, I think even J.J. Redick admitted this. They were literally done. Their belief was gone. Emotionally, they were drained. And there was just no belief. I don't think, like you said, we're not at that stage here. However, given the magnitude of the series, just what's at stake, because I think this team is easily better than the 2015 team that blew a 3-1 lead in terms of their expectations and in terms of their ceiling.
Do you want the scarier parallel for that year?
For 2015?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who was the team waiting for them in the conference finals?
The Warriors.
What were the Warriors considered at that time?
Underdogs, I believe.
The best team in basketball.
Were they? Was that the
That was the 67 win season.
Oh, that was the first Steve Kerr year. That's right.
That was the first year. They were the best team in basketball. And here's the other parallel. The Golden State Warriors that year through 2 rounds played 10 games. The Lakers also played 10 games. You ready for the crazier parallel?
Okay.
In that second round series for the Warriors against the Memphis Grizzlies, what was the key change that Coach Steve Kerr made?
Was it subbing out David Lee and putting hold on. What was it? Was it starting Iguodala? Who was it? What was it?
Nope. It was making sure that Andrew Bogut guarded Tony Allen.
Oh, but your memory is better than mine.
Yep.
So what you're saying is Zubac has to guard Jeremy Grant, and we're good.
You know what's crazy? and I do want to – we need to end this. We've been talking way too long. You know what is crazy? That's not the worst idea in the world. They literally did it last round against Dorian Finney-Smith.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I absolutely thought they should have – done that at some point and maybe thrown Kawhi at Jokic.
Yeah.
Because he can be physical with him. He's long, but.
And then have the double come from Paul George or Morris at the nail. And this way Zubac is still closer to the rim to be the rim protector if someone cuts.
But the problem is rotating. If they move the ball in the perimeter, Zubac is the guy who has to come over and help out. That's the only
I get it.
Negative.
I think I would still rather just live with it. If Jeremy Grant beats you hitting 7 threes in a game, throw your damn hands up and just count your lucky stars that it didn't happen earlier and you were sent home faster. You have to spend more time at Disney World.
Yeah, seriously. All right, Justin, anything you want to plug before we hop off?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, at FlyByNight, FlyByKnite. You can follow me on Patreon, patreon.com/FlyByNight. I will say this about my Patreon. I know it's mostly Clippers or all Clippers related. If the Clippers do lose game 7, you are going to – well, first off, I have a breakdown video. By the time you're listening to this, I have a breakdown video out on Tuesday for game 6. If the Clippers do lose game 7, I will have a breakdown video out Wednesday. And if the Clippers lose game 7 – on my Patreon, I will continue breaking down a playoff game per day. So the previous day's playoff game, I will do a video breakdown of that and put that up the following day before the next day's playoff game. So even if the Clippers get eliminated, I'll still be doing stuff. So if you follow me on there, you're not going to be devoid of stuff. I feel like I said stuff a lot.
There you go. I mean, no, I think it was fine.
Hopefully the Clippers
do some stuff. It's late. We're all waiting to go to sleep and also anxious for the game tomorrow. So it's fine. I forgive you. If you guys like the podcast, please subscribe wherever you guys get your podcast, whether it's Apple, Google Play, iHeart, Spotify, any other podcast, app or provider that I'm forgetting. Subscribe there for us. If you did enjoy it, please also leave a 5-star review in the review section. We really appreciate those. Give us 5 stars. And let us know what we can fix, what you didn't like, comments, questions, suggestions, concerns, all welcome, very much welcome. You can follow me at Tomer Azarly. That's TomerAzarly on Twitter and Instagram, and Facebook, I guess. And then, I hope you guys enjoyed it. We will catch you guys next. I don't know when the next episode will be. I guess we'll do one after Game 7 to preview the Western Conference Finals, whether it's the Lakers, Clippers, or Lakers Nuggets. But, we'll chat again this week and go from there. But, hope you guys enjoyed it. Clipper fans, don't put too much into Game 7 tomorrow. Don't put your relationships on the line. Don't put your own personal health at stake. I've talked to a couple of people who have said that after the Game 6 loss, they got, a girlfriend reached out to him, or they just, they had some issues, I guess. Right.
I'm going to give them some advice. Do not bet on game 7.
Oh yeah. No,
do not place money on game 7. I don't care who you are. Don't.
Do not. Yeah.
But if you are a Clipper fan, do not.
I would say more importantly is that don't let it affect your personal life, because it's just a game. It's just sports at the end of the day.
And don't let a loved one do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please don't. Yeah. That's pretty much it. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Justin, thanks again for joining me. We will catch you guys next episode. See you guys.